Yeah, welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, David Beauclair, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We've got a lot to get to today coming up on the show. The Titans, the final technical day yesterday of minicamp. Mike Vrabel speaking yesterday. We'll get to some of that coming up here in just a few minutes. Chase McCabe, our very own Chase McCabe, dropping by at 7:30. NASCAR coming to town this weekend in the Ally 400. Chase McCabe going to be involved with that as well. So we'll talk to Chase about that and the race coming to town as well. Teron Davenport for his weekly visit at 8 o'clock. Call Your Shot Friday, of course, and weekend winners on the table as well. And as always, taking your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. David Beauclair, you made it back. We didn't run you off completely yesterday.
I did. It was a little easier to get up this morning even, too, I found.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's already ready to go. Do it once. Why not do it again?
I mean, Rex Road's still not used to it, so.
I worked at an afternoon paper back in the day, and these were similar hours to that. I did that for about 2.5 years, right when I first got married, and after 2.5 years, I was ready for something different. I'll say that.
I understand totally. But he's back today.
But two days I can do.
That's right.
I'll do another 4 hours with you here.
Absolutely. David Beauclair back in the saddle today. Mark Howard coming up on Monday. Joe Rexroad will be back on Tuesday from the hinterlands of Michigan. So we'll look forward to that coming up on Tuesday. Ryan Porth, how we doing? What's going on?
Beautiful. Doing beautiful.
I saw you had kind of a premature tweet last night of your beloved Cincinnati Reds.
You just had to bring that up, didn't you?
Well, it was pretty funny.
They go from down 2-0 going into the ninth inning to up 4-2, and then they lose 6-4 by the end of the ninth inning on two-run homers that they gave up.
But I guess when they got up 4-2, you were feeling it on Twitter. The confidence was in full form.
Yes, I was. Back-to-back pitches. They go tie 2-2, and then the next pitch, they take a 4-2 lead. They're two hot rookies.
Can't take a knee in baseball.
No, you can't.
Can't run out the time when you got the lead.
There is no clock that you can bleed. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
this is what happens when you go to Aldi to get your bullpen.
Well, it's true. I feel like that's been an issue with them for a while.
This year more than most years.
That's saying something. Wow. Well, good luck to you, Reds. They've been playing pretty well as of late.
They won 11 of 13 going into last night.
There you go.
Which helped the premature celebration because it's like they're rolling. They just made this ninth inning comeback. And then, womp.
Then it went all downhill from there. Well, better luck over the weekend. We'll see what happens on that front with the Reds.
Preach.
Tampa Bay takes a 2-1 lead in the, I guess, I want to call it the Eastern Conference Final, but it's not. The Stanley Cup semifinal.
It does feel like the Eastern Conference Final. That's right.
They take a 2-1 lead, get a 2-1 win last night against the Islanders at home. Islanders had a late push towards the end. They had a couple good looks to tie it up, but turns out that Andre Vasilevsky guy in net for Tampa Bay is pretty good. Not bad.
Big fella
in net. The Bucks force a game 7 as well at home last night in the NBA against the Nets. So a lot going on in the world of sports last night.
The game 7, I'm about 99.9% sure, is one that you're going to be able to hear on 102.5 The Game tomorrow night.
There you go. That'd be great. Lots of stuff happening this weekend in the world of sports. And the Titans closing out minicamp officially yesterday. Mike Vrabel with his final press conference, I guess, before training camp comes rolling around. And not a whole lot to say from Mike Vrabel yesterday, but one thing he did touch on was what has been a popular topic from really the first game of last season on, and that is the third down defense for this Tennessee Titans team. Mike Vrabel with some interesting comments yesterday on third down defense and how they look to improve that heading into this season. Here's what Titans head coach Mike Vrabel had to say.
Mike, I know going into this offseason, I know third down on defense was obviously a big priority, and I know Shane mentioned it too, that there'd been a lot of work done in that regard. You know, specifically, what did you see in terms of the work done here in the off season anyway? And did you see reason for optimism that things are, you know, going to get better in that regard?
Yeah, John, we're very confident that we'll be improved on third down. You know, it's just, I think it's well done is better than well said. We're going to have to continue to put the work in and practice and do some things at a really good speed to go out there and build confidence so when we go to the season, you know, that there's an understanding of what we're trying to do on each and every call and being able to go out there and execute it, and whether that's affect the quarterback or disrupt timing and a lot of different ways. But you're right, it has to be better. The third down, you know, has to be better for us to be successful.
So that was Mike Vrabel yesterday at his press conference. And, David, I think that may be the understatement of the year. The third down defense is going to definitely have to be better for them to be successful. It was historically bad a season ago on defense. Honestly, like, I look at this situation and I realize there's a lot that's changed on defense, and there are a lot of concerns on that side of the ball still heading into the season. I almost feel like third down defense may be better by default, given how bad it was a year ago.
You know, I agree, too. It can't be worse. But it almost feels to me, and, you know, it was mentioned in the question there, Shane Bowen had talked about how much time they've spent on third down defense, and Mike Vrabel talked about it. It almost feels like, you know, the little Dutch boy with his finger in the dike. Like, they're plugging this hole, and another hole's about to open up some of their,
yep,
their spending. You know, it's almost like, yes, you have to address it, and you have to deal with it, but it can't be that bad again. You know, you've addressed it through personnel and whatnot, so, you know, just go through it. You know, the coaches know. It's not like the coaches had to sit back and say, okay, do we know how to defend on third down? Of course they know how to defend,
right,
on third down. I mean, they know what calls to make. It almost feels like a little overcompensation on that regard right now, and the result's going to be a better third down defense, but something else that they've neglected this offseason is going to pop up and be a terrible problem this year.
Other team never gets to third down. It's just too busy on first and second down moving the ball on that front. Now, that is interesting, and look, a lot of Titans fans last year, especially when Jonathan Joseph was in, complaining that the secondary, the corners specifically, playing too far off the line and that they were giving the receivers too much of a cushion. You think back to that Pittsburgh game specifically where Ben Roethlisberger is basically throwing six-yard routes the whole game and just eating that defense up. I get it. That's very frustrating to watch if you're a Titans fan. Also, I think, you know, when Jonathan Joseph's on the field, one thing that you're concerned about is just getting torched down the field at some point, too. So it's kind of a tough balance there. We'll see if, from a personnel standpoint, they're better equipped to handle that this year.
It's, you know, certainly it's different personnel, and Caleb Farley's going to be a big part of that if he can get in there. We'll see how they use these guys. A big year for Christian Fulton, second round draft pick, a guy that you're obviously cleared the way for him, and you're expecting him to be a big part of that. Probably the slot guy in most occasions, and a guy who's really going to have to be up there battling. We talked yesterday about Jack Rabbit Jenkins and his competitiveness. I'm pretty confident he's a guy who's not going to be playing 7 yards off on every snap. I mean, there will be situations where that's that's what he's supposed to do. But that guy has shown he's going to be battling.
So how important is it in your mind from John Robinson's perspective that Caleb Farley gets in early and is ready to go, and not only is ready to go, but looks the part that he's ready to play at a high level in the NFL? How important is that from John Robinson's point of view? We know what the noise is like with him and first-round picks, especially after the Isaiah Wilson situation a year ago. How important is it that Caleb Farley comes in and not only is available early, but plays well early?
I don't think it's – I mean, you want him in there as soon as possible because he's big, he's athletic, he's your first-round draft pick, obviously. But I think it's more – in their minds, it's the Jeffrey Simmons thing. It's like, we've got this guy for 4, maybe 5 years. If we give up a couple games on the front end to make sure he's physically right and we get the really good 3.5, 4.5 years out of him, that, you know, on balance, that's a win. That's what you're thinking of as the Titans. And, you know, it was sort of the same mindset in terms of drafting Simmons. It's like, we understand the medical reasons that this guy is available when we're picking, but if not for those medical reasons, he wouldn't be here now. He's too good to pass up at this point is the thinking. So Do you want him out there in week one? Yes. If it's not till October, you know, that's going to be okay, provided he's healthy and can do the things you expect him to do.
Mike Vrabel's in he's in full midseason form yesterday, wasn't he?
Well, no, actually, midseason he's good. It's off season. It's off season when he just really somebody asked him about, like, a couple people asked him yesterday about, you know, comparing kind of where they were this year to where they were last year, and like that sort of thing he hates in general, you know. But those are the kind of things that people are talking about this time of year, and you know, like the other questions he hates, like, you know, who among the wide receivers, you know, is looking good or whatever. And, you know, I think that came up yesterday too, and there's a lot of guys in there kind of thing. He doesn't
like singling people out.
Doesn't like singling people out, doesn't like talking about the process, doesn't like talking about injuries, doesn't like comparisons, and, you know, those are kind of all the things that people like to do this time of year. So you know, when you get into the season and you can talk about opponents and you can talk about, you know, sort of what happened in the game or you know, to a little bit, a small extent without any specifics, but sort of game planning and, you know, dealing with what's going to come up in a game, those are the, you know, when he can talk football, when he can talk actual football, man, I would imagine sitting around a living room with a couple beers watching a game with him would be a real treat, because he loves talking actual football, that's for sure. But this time of year, he's a bit of a tough nut to crack.
Well, and we've got a few weeks away from him now, and then it's training camp, and be right back in the real thing. So we'll see what happens on that front coming up here in just a few weeks. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on the Titans and get into the wide receiver room. Julio Jones coming into the fold, what does that mean for the Titans? And can he buck what may be to some a concerning trend that has been with Titans wide receivers in the past? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Robbie Stanley, David Beauclair, Ryan Porth are with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Titans and Julio Jones, the addition to the Titans, obviously has been met with a lot of fanfare. And we had Brian Finneran on yesterday talking about what he still has left in the tank at 32 years old. He looks great in the minicamp drills that he has. We know that before he got hurt last year, still producing at an elite level on the field. So a lot of excitement, a lot of high expectations from Titans fans for Julio Jones coming into this team. But, David, as you know, this is not the first time that the Titans have gotten an older, elite-level wide receiver in the past. I think about Randy Moss coming over on the waiver wire. I think about Andre Johnson as well. Obviously, two guys that put up a ton of yards, had a ton of catches, and a ton of production in this league at the NFL level, and came to the Titans, and it just was not the same. I don't necessarily have the same fear for Julio Jones, but there's no question. I mean, veteran receivers coming into this franchise has not gone as well as they would have hoped to this point. And if Julio Jones is going to come in and work out, at this point he would be more of the exception than the rule, I would say.
He would. I looked at this a week or so ago and produced something on it. I found four guys: Carl Pickens in 2000,
yep,
Eric Molds 2007, Randy Moss 2010, and Andre Johnson. The last three of those guys all among the top 40 in career catches in the NFL, as Julio Jones is, and you know, none of them worked out very well. Like you think back to Carl Pickens in 2000, they get him here, and they sign him to a 5-year contract. He's 30 years old. You know, had been productive in Cincinnati, had led the league in touchdown catches 1 year. Guy played 1 year, caught 10 passes.
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
Not very well.
Not very well. Randy Moss, you know, the great makeup for not drafting him in 98. You get him 12 years later on the waiver wire. The guy had a 3-game stretch where they didn't even throw him a pass.
It's incredible. It really is.
Which, I mean, that was more an indictment of Vince Young's quarterback play at that point than it was where Randy Moss was. But you know, guy played 8 games for him, caught 6 passes. Randy Moss.
Six passes.
Andre Johnson shows up after all those years in Houston. 1 year in Indianapolis, plays half the season. I'm going to retire. Yeah. Thanks, I'm done. Nine catches. At least he scored.
Did catch a game winner.
Did catch a game winner. Scored a
what
couple
a pass
touchdowns.
By Mariota.
You know, Eric Mould's the star of this group with a whopping 32 receptions. Played the whole season at least for them in 2007. But Julio's bucking a little history here in Titansville. This is where elite receivers go to vanish. It's like the Bermuda Triangle for them.
Well, I guess the good news is if you're Julio Jones, when you start to look at that list, doesn't take very much to surpass those guys.
No, that's right. You never want to follow the legend, right? As a as a coach, and certainly Julio can up the ante for big time wide receivers coming here. It's different coaching staff, different quarterback, all those sorts of things. There is reason for optimism as always with Julio, but this is the bit of history he has to confront coming here.
Ron on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says Nate Washington was the best addition to our team as a receiver, I think, in Titans history.
Yeah, and led the team in receptions 1 year, had some really good moments. Certainly not in the class of these guys, nope, though, and in terms of what you would expect when you bring them here. And what you got from them.
So on that front, I mean, I look at Julio Jones, and I mean, the expectations are going to be, I think, higher than all those four. Maybe, you know, Carl Pickens is interesting because I think back to 2000, there were a lot of excitement about him coming in.
It was big time.
Yeah, big time to get him in here. And, you know, like you said, 5-year deal, and that didn't work out. I mean, I even go back to Yancey Thigpen coming on board as well, where – you thought maybe that could be something to work with, and through injury and through just lack of production, that didn't work out very well either. So it's been pretty fascinating to watch the receivers in the history of this franchise, how difficult it's been to find receivers to come in and be productive, both in free agency and in the draft as well. Like we know the history of trying to draft receivers here, Tyrone Calico in the fold as well, Justin Hunter in the second round. Kendall Wright to a certain degree. I mean, he had his moments here, but he didn't live up to where he was selected in the draft. It's been a tough go trying to find receivers here. And then, you know, Corey Davis was a good player. He didn't live up to where he was selected in the draft. And then you get A.J. Brown, and you think to yourself, finally, you found a guy here that you can select in the draft and that you can start to build around at that position. So Julio's going to come in. I think, look, physically, he's more of a phenomenon than really any of those guys, with the exception of Randy Moss. But Randy Moss at the end of his career at that time. I think Julio's got a chance to buck this trend based on just how much I think he's still got left in the tank. He looks awfully good out there.
I mean, it's the injury. It's last year's injury that scares you, and you start to think, okay, is he one of these guys who's going to miss at least 5 or 6 games every year now that he plays, or can he, you know, was this just one of those things that happened to him and he's going to be fine? And,
yeah,
and certainly, you know, everyone wants to believe the latter around here. And you know, if you've watched him, it's easy to believe that because Julio Jones is not your normal wide receiver. I mean, you saw it from the day he showed up at Alabama. You saw it from the day he showed up in the NFL. He's just better. He's just built better than everybody else. It's just That little bit of history, when I think about it, it's like, oh, is something gonna happen that he's just gonna be the next in line here for that list?
It's like the Predators trying to find that elite scorer. Yeah. it's really hard to do on that front. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Troy texting in, none of those receivers were under this regime.
Right.
That is true. They were not. Now, they were spread out over a few regimes here with the Tennessee Titans, especially when you think about Andre Johnson coming in as well. But there is – I mean, it's a different league, first off. It's much more of a passing league, especially when you think back to Carl Pickens. I mean, the NFL in 2000 and the NFL now in 2021, almost two completely different sports. So to Troy's point, definitely a different regime, a different league. But, I mean, you can't really deny that history with this franchise when you look at it.
And it goes back to the idea that Jones is going to be the seventh oldest wide receiver. Yeah. I mean, that's remarkable to me because he doesn't –
incredible.
He doesn't strike you as an old man.
Yep.
But in NFL terms and NFL wide receiver terms, he's really old. And I guess part of that is there's so many young – like the draft every year now is loaded with wide receivers, right?
Yeah.
So and the philosophy is always you want to get younger and faster and cheaper, and it's easy to do that at wide receiver now than it is a lot of other positions. So I think that probably has skewed that number a little bit, but Julio Jones is an old man. I'm sure in his quiet moments in the middle of the night when John Robinson starts rolling over worst case scenarios, these are the kind of things that come up in his head too, where he's just like, okay, what happens if all of a sudden Julio Jones plays like an old wide receiver instead of Julio Jones? And you know, they'll have to adjust, I guess.
Well, we've seen it in this league too. I mean, the end comes pretty quickly.
Yeah,
I mean, it's you can be really, really good, and all of a sudden you lose that step or half step, and that can make all the difference. Now, again, I'm not saying that's going to happen with Julio Jones because I still think he's got a lot left in the tank. But this league, it doesn't take long before it starts to go the other way in a hurry.
You're right. It's not Julio goes from, you know, 16 yards a carry to 14 and a half yards a carry to 13 and a half. It's like you go from 16 and a half yards a catch to 9 yards a catch, just like that. And all of a sudden you can't run away from people, and you've seen it, those skill positions, you see that it's a cliff much more so than a nice, easy glide downhill. And
it's kind of the same thing on the other side of the ball, too, like at corner.
Cornerback is a big position for that.
All the time. And you know, I thought Malcolm Butler, for the most part, given the defense he was on last year, was pretty good for the most part.
Yep.
But you worry about, you know, like at some point, is he going to be able to run as well? And you know, obviously, the cap was the main part of the decision for the Titans, but I think also a part of that was how confident are we that Malcolm Butler's going to be able to run at this same level next year? I think that's part of what went into their decision.
That's a big part of all of John Robinson's contracts too. It seems to me that you know, if it's a 5-year deal, you can see it's really more like a 3-year deal, and he always sort of gives himself an out in these long term deals. You know, with Julio, you've got him for 3 years now. You'd like to think it's going to be 3 really good years. You know, maybe you have to reevaluate after the second year. Now, I mean, this isn't a contract he put together. I mean, 3 years, he'll be 35 years old, and probably the oldest wide receiver in the league at that point. But if it's not this year, you feel like that cliff is coming somewhere in the next 3 years for Julio. It's just the Titans hope it's a little further off in the distance there.
That's right. We'll continue the conversation on the Titans wide receiver room when we come back. What kind of an impact could Julio Jones have on the younger receivers? And what do we think of this wide receiver room? Who's going to make this team? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, David Beauclair, Ryan Porth here with you on this Friday morning in Middle Tennessee discussing the Titans and the wide receiving room. Julio Jones coming into the fold, kind of knocking things back a little bit in terms of the pecking order in the wide receiver room. Still a lot of young receivers on the table, battling for spots on the team, on the practice squad. And we had Brian Finneran on yesterday, former Falcons wide receiver, now with 680 The Fan down in Atlanta. And he discussed the impact Julio Jones could make, not only on the field with the Titans, but with the younger receivers as well. Here's what Brian Finneran had to say on the impact of Julio Jones.
I think you take a little bit from everybody you play with. So Julio got to play with Roddy White and Harry Douglas, who was in Tennessee for a little bit, and Eric Weems, and a handful of other guys, Calvin Ridley, who seems like has come along a long way under the tutelage of of Julio Jones. Now, they all have their original talent and skill sets, but Julio's is top-notch. And I think there's certain routes. The post corner for Julio is just deadly because he breaks it off so hard to the post and then changes direction so easily to get back to the corner. That's something that guys can learn from. So specific routes on the route tree he can help guys do. His releases at the line of scrimmage are fantastic. So when you get to be a veteran like Julio is, you just take little parts of your game and try to pass those on to the guys you're playing with, whether that's AJ, who's pretty much a veteran now, or young guys on that roster as well. So he'll help wherever he can out, and they'll benefit from it big time.
So that was Brian Finneran on with us yesterday on the show. And, David, you look at, obviously, Julio Jones has come in and, by all reports on the field, has already started to do some of that, where he's showing receivers kind of something that he notices in their routes or things that he's picked up along the way. And you brought that up. How beneficial could that be even with A.J. Brown at this point in his career? How big a deal is this with Julio Jones coming in and everything he's seen, everything he's done, the experience that he has? How much do you think this could help the receivers already in the room, A.J. Brown specifically?
Yeah, by all accounts, he's a willing mentor, which is always good. There are certain things that Julio Jones does that he won't be able to teach, right? I mean, let's face it.
When Brian was talking about that post corner route and like how good he is at running it, and I was like, well, yeah, because he's Julio Jones.
That's exactly right. Like he's probably not going to be able to teach somebody how to make that seamless cut, right, and leave defensive backs flailing. What he can tell them is, like, look, if you see a defensive back lined up this way, it probably means so and so. Or if you attack a defensive back this way, you can make him turn a certain direction, and then you can go the other way. Those are the kinds of things that experience and understanding and being an older guy in the league, those are the things that all that gives you. And if you're willing to share, and that's always a big thing with veterans in this league. Are you helping the guys who are going to one day replace you, or are you not? And if you're Julio Jones, I think that's probably easy to do, because you look at these guys and none of them scare you physically. None of them, none of them. I remember hearing when Drew Bledsoe in Dallas. I was in Dallas one time. I was watching a game, and the announcers, the game was getting out of reach, and I guess Tony Romo was going to get a chance to come in late, and the announcers were talking about him, and they said then that Drew Bledsoe had told them that he was in a situation where, I better not get hurt. Yep. Like, Drew Bledsoe knew that this guy could sling it around. I'm sure
he'd seen that before. Yeah, with a guy named Tom Brady.
Yeah, I'm sure Julio Jones looks at these guys, and nobody there makes him go, oh God,
right?
He's going to force me out anytime soon. So it's probably really easy. Not that he's not a good guy. Not that he wouldn't do it anyway. But you get to a certain point where you're hanging on by a thread. Maybe you don't do that as much. And I think Julio will be happy that the guys who are interesting to me are guys they were here most or all of last year. They're veteran guys, and specifically Chester Rogers, mm-hmm, and Marcus Johnson, who are going to get a chance in the preseason. They're going to have more of an opportunity in training camp to show what they can do. Can they sort of upset the balance of or the depth chart, what we see as the pecking order for these wide receivers, and do something, carve out a spot for themselves this year?
Well, and it's interesting, if you're the Titans, I mean, how many are you keeping at wide receiver? Because I look at it now, and four spots are spoken for at this point. You've got A.J. Brown, you've got Julio Jones, you've got Josh Reynolds, and Des Fitzpatrick, who you just drafted in the fourth round.
So you traded up 17 spots to get.
Exactly.
I mean, that speaks volumes about how much they want him on this team.
So that's four spots right there. I mean, we've seen teams keep five wide receivers.
Five or six is the number. Yeah. It kind of depends. And Racy McMath, I think, is sort of an outlier in that group, because I think his roster battle this year isn't so much with the other wide receivers as it is sort of the last cornerback or the last linebacker.
Yep.
Given his size, given his history, Racy McMath is going to have to make this team as a special teamer first. and then he can practice with the wide receivers every day and do that and sort of develop that way. That's kind of his way in. So the number might be plus one, whatever it is, if he makes it. But I think if he makes it, it's as a special teamer. And, you know, the next guy who sort of has something to lose is Cam Batson.
Yep.
Because he's in this group of big, giant wide receivers, he's the small, quick, more what you think of as a slot guy right now. He's sort of the prototypical slot guy. Plus, he's their return man with Khalif Raymond off in Detroit now. And Batson's a guy Mike Vrabel has really liked and has been unabashed in his admiration for Batson's toughness the last couple years. So, you know, Batson is sort of the guy that's there and has a spot to lose, I would think, going into the preseason. That's why I say then you look at guys like Rodgers and Johnson and, you know, Nick Westbrook Akina was, you know, did some things last year. Managed to be on the roster all season long.
Joe Rexroad was a big fan of Nick Westbrook.
Fan. You know, yeah. Like he's one of those guys who, you know, as a rookie, you say that guy had a good year, got himself off to a good start. Well, guess what? Going into training camp this year again, he doesn't have a spot.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to have to – some things are going to have to go his way, or he's going to have to start the season on the practice squad again.
Well, that's why when you brought up yesterday, and I totally agree, the idea of the Julio Jones trade being a necessary trade for this Titans team, like – I think about Josh Reynolds being the number two. Like, I have no clue whether or not Josh Reynolds could have handled that role, if he would have gotten close to providing what Corey Davis brought to the table last year or not. I feel a ton better about Josh Reynolds being the three. And what this also allows you to do with Des Fitzpatrick, I mean, if he's not ready out of the gate for meaningful snaps, you don't really have to give it to him at this point. Like, he was going to be your three, and you were going to need him to play pretty regularly for this team. Now you can kind of bring him along at his own pace.
The top three, I mean, you weren't even sure who the top three were before. It was going to be Brown, Reynolds, and then, okay, maybe some Batson, some Fitzpatrick, some Rodgers, some, you know, like there some combination of other guys. Now, you know, to your point, you've got three proven NFL guys, and you feel like, you know, your one's as good as anybody. Say, we'll call A.J. Brown number one. Yep. He's as good as anybody. Your two is pretty much better than almost everybody else's two right now. Your three is a guy who's been in the league, whose numbers have gone up each year, so you feel good about him as a three. And then, yeah, to your point, you kind of let everybody else decide what they can earn. You know, let them earn their playing time and their opportunities from there. You're not putting anybody out there just because you need to have somebody out there. The group looks a whole lot better with the trade than it did.
So you talked about Cam Batson kind of being the return guy as well with Khalif Raymond leaving. He's in a competition right now for sure. If it's not going to be Cam Batson, what do you do if you're the Titans in the return game? Because, I mean, we talked about this the other day. I think back to Adoree Jackson. Part of the reason you drafted him in the first round was to be that guy. And look, kick return just kind of is what it is in the NFL now. Very rarely do you see big plays anymore in the kick return game. Punt return, though, I feel like there have been times over the last 4 or 5 years where that's been a pretty big weakness for the Titans that they've got to find a way to address as they move forward here. If it's not going to be Cam Batson, what do you think it is for the Titans in the return game?
That's a really good question, and I have to admit one that I have not pondered. You know, Darrington Evans is a guy who has return experience both, and I think he'll probably be the kickoff returner. He's not going to get a ton of snaps on the offense, even under a best case scenario. So I think as a third round pick, you probably look to him as, you know, let's get a little more out of him than just 10 or 12 snaps on offense per game. So he could be a guy who could kind of handle both the punt and kickoff return if that's the way you need to go. I think Brady Breeze did some of that at Oregon too. He, you know, the last pick in this year's draft. Now, you know, there's no guarantee he's on the roster either when all is said and done. But he's a guy who's done it. So I would say probably Evans is the is the number one guy, and from there you just have to figure something out if neither one of those two work out for whatever reason.
So what's your confidence level in the Titans wide receiver room? Who's going to make this team? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue this conversation on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Now, we're discussing the Titans wide receiver room and bringing up the top three at wide receiver: Julio Jones, A.J. Brown, Josh Reynolds. And, David, I think it's pretty obvious when you look at this group, the true, quote-unquote, dedicated slot guy that a lot of people thought the Titans may draft. Maybe some people pointed to Amari Rodgers, who... It's funny, the Titans actually ended up trading with the Packers, and the Packers take Amari Rodgers in the slot. But no dedicated slot guy taken in the draft. You look at Reynolds, you look at Julio Jones, you look at A.J. Brown in your top three that'll be on the field most of the time. None of those guys really true dedicated slot receivers either. So how do you think they go about handling that? Do you think that it's just a constant state of moving guys around? Is that going to be Josh Reynolds' responsibility most of the time? Is it going to be Anthony Firkser? How do you think they handle that if you're the Titans on offense?
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot of Reynolds. I think everybody sort of likes the idea of the bigger, the badder we can be at wide receiver, the better. I mean, you're already intimidating looking when you break the huddle with A.J. Brown and Julio Jones and Derrick Henry and now you add Josh Reynolds, who's 6'3", 197, yep, and you line him out there in the slot up against a 5'9", you know, 180-pound cornerback. Yep. And, I mean, that could be some fun. You figure out some things. You know, maybe you don't run the traditional slot routes with him all the time. You know, maybe you do a couple things differently there. But you know, I think like as we say, I think Batson is that guy.
Yeah.
Who, it, you know, sort of fits the suit, if you will, in terms of what a slot receiver looks like and should be, and you know, did that role fairly well late last season, got some throws, but you know, maybe that's what you do. You just kind of do it differently than everybody else.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Reynolds is an interesting guy. He's played in every game since he's come to the league. He's not missed a game yet to this point. 16 games every year. His targets have gone up every year. His receptions have gone up. Most years went up dramatically. Last year, 52 catches a year ago, 618 yards. A great deal for the Titans. He's on a one-year deal for hardly any money whatsoever. And, you know, probably signed the deal hoping that, you know, the cap goes back up next year. You're back in free agency. And you can kind of get your payday then. I do wonder, with Julio Jones coming into the fold, how is that going to affect Josh Reynolds? I mean, we've heard both sides. Some people on our text line have said that's going to open him up for even more opportunities now with Julio Jones coming in. And some people have said, sorry, buddy, those balls are going to be going to Julio Jones at this point. It's going to be interesting to see kind of how he fits in to this offense.
It's going to cost him play time.
Yep.
No question. It's going to cost him snaps. It's going to cost him targets. I asked him last week, and he almost bit on it, but he stopped himself, and he said, you know, yeah, you think about it's in the back of your mind. Because I asked him, have you thought about what it will mean in terms of the caliber of player who will be covering you? You know, he's not going to be facing anybody's number one or number two cornerback.
Nope.
And maybe not their number three if they're doubling one of the outside guys. Now you're looking at a safety, or you're looking at a fourth cornerback, or sometimes you might even be looking at a smaller, faster linebacker trying to cover him. And if you know, if I don't know Josh Reynolds, you know, I've only been in a couple Zooms with him. But if you're an optimistic guy, if your inclination is to look on the bright side, that's the bright side for him. I mean, he could be sitting here going, son of a gun, this was my chance to be an every down wide receiver, and now, you know, Or he can say, well, the opportunities I'm going to get, I'm going to have somebody lined up opposite me that I can dominate.
Yep.
And I will be open every time I'm on the field. And if that's the way he chooses to go about this, he could have himself some fun this year, I would think.
He absolutely could. And, you know, if you're him, yeah, your playing time is going to go down some, I think. But, I mean, I even throw Firkser into this category at
absolutely.
Times, too. I mean, just think about with all the different things the defense has to worry about with A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and Derrick Henry. I mean, you would think, and Joe has said, you know, defensive coordinators may not even know who Anthony Firkser's name is by the time they get through the week,
yeah.
looking at everything else the Titans have to offer here. I'm still worried about tight end because I think, you know, I'm just not sold that Anthony Firkser is a number one tight end at this point. And who knows, maybe another move is coming somewhere down the line here. But the more I think about it, the more I can kind of see at least if this is it and this is the direction the Titans go, I can see what the thought process is of, all right, you got Julio Jones. We've seen Anthony Firkser can catch the ball. Obviously, Ryan Tannehill trusts Anthony Firkser to a pretty good degree. We've seen that over the last couple of years. He could get some good opportunities coming over the middle.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think the tight end room should be better than it is. I fear that it's going to be a little predictable. That
yep.
you know, if Jeff Swaim's out there, defenses can bet, well, 85% chance here they're running the ball. If Anthony Firkser's out there, they go, okay, 85% chance this is a pass. You know, they're going to be tipping their hands a little bit there. But at the same time, you know, Ryan Tannehill completed 315 throws last year. If you say that's the number again, almost half of those would go to Julio Jones and A.J. Brown to start with this year. Josh Reynolds catches another 35 to 40. You know, there's just not that many throws to go around. So do you need a guy to be Jonnu Smith this year? I mean, obviously you'd like to. You'd like to have as many versatile weapons as possible. But you know, maybe that's what. Maybe this is just a really wide receiver heavy passing game this year. And if that's the case, with A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
So you can get by for a year with maybe a little less at tight end than you would have otherwise.
So you brought up Tannehill, and obviously he's been great since he got here with the Titans. I mean, last year, 3,800 yards, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. What do you think with this new offense, if Julio Jones comes in and they can develop some chemistry pretty quickly, what do you think those numbers could look like for Tannehill this year in terms of kind of, you know, forcing himself into some MVP conversation? We've had Titans fans ask us, could Ryan Tannehill find himself in the thick of an MVP discussion this year? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think he can, because he's still Ryan Tannehill. People don't perceive him that way, and I don't mean that as a knock against him. You know, the perception is out there. Like if you listen to national talk shows, or you see some of the subject comes up from time to time. Like, are you sold on Ryan Tannehill? Around the league, people are still debating after 26 starts with the Titans, plus 3 more or 4 more in the playoffs, 30 starts total. People are debating, well, when's Ryan Tannehill going to look like Ryan Tannehill again? Like people still are fixated on the Miami version of Ryan Tannehill. So I don't think and if things go as well as everybody has envisioned, it's going to be, well, of course he has big numbers. Look at everybody who's around him. Ryan, for whatever reason, Ryan Tannehill is now in the situation where he can be as good or better than anyone can imagine, and he's just not going to get the credit for it for whatever reason.
Well, just look at the reaction when Julio was traded here from some of the national media as well. It was, oh, you got A.J. Brown, you've got Derrick Henry, you've got Julio Jones, and Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
You got Ryan Tannehill as well.
I mean, though, It's a complete. He's a completely different quarterback than he was in Miami.
Yep.
This is a completely different organization. It's not like he was surrounded by great players all those years in Miami either. Plus, he was a young, developing quarterback. I mean, for whatever reason, he can't shake that. And I'm guilty of that too. I find myself thinking sometimes, well, okay, but earlier this offseason, I had a conversation with Jim Mora Jr., you know, former head coach of the Seahawks and 49ers. I asked him specifically, I said, is Ryan Tannehill at the point now where if something happened to Derrick Henry, he could keep the Titans going and you know, they can be a Super Bowl contender with him as the primary piece of the offense? And he just kind of chuckled. He goes, I wouldn't say that. You know what I mean? That's the reputation that he has, and I don't know what he has to do to shake that. Yeah. I mean, maybe he has to go 40 for 50 for 475 yards and four touchdowns and a Super Bowl win. Maybe that's what it'll take to finally convince people otherwise. But it seems like he just can't shed that burden of a guy who'd never had a winning record, or I guess one winning record in all those years in Miami.
It's incredible. I mean, you think about just the basic stats, 55 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, basically 68.5% of his passes have been completed since he took over as Titans quarterback. Been pretty good, but to your point, even if he lights it up this year, a lot of the conversation, at least nationally, will be, well, yeah, he had Julio Jones and A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry. Of course he did.
Yeah, he better be putting up those numbers. He's not gonna get his love and even last year he should have been a Pro Bowler.
Yep.
And he said as much. He was disappointed when he wasn't, but I think he's starting to understand that too, that like, well, okay, this is, you know, the guy's produced in the clutch, the guy's he's done everything you need a quarterback to do. He's not out there just handing the ball off to Derrick Henry 30 times a game.
When we come back, what seems like an annual conversation in the sport of baseball about cheating, back on the table again and in a major way in Major League Baseball right now. Our question is, do fans actually care if baseball players are tweeting or cheating? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.